We sampled it from him, but it's not the same bass line.
You can get in serious trouble for copyright infringement.
You got an organ going.
Yeah? Copyright is not doing crap!
Copyright? What's copyright?
It's the right of the owners to control.
Right now!
You know what time it is.
Welcome to
the copyright
experiment.
Yeah, what do you say? Welcome to the copyright experiment. There you go.
What's up?
Drop in DJ Mochi. You're listening to the Copyright Experiment, 11 o'clock on CITR 101.9 FM.
Are you stoked to be tuned in? Should be.
Should be.
You're in fucking Vancouver and it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Yeah, not really what we're talking about. But, you know, it is nice here.
Yeah.
If you live in Vancouver, you're probably listening on the radio. Or you're technologically inclined and listening online.
Using the interwebs.
Using the interwebs all over the world.
Them tubes.
Yeah, or you're listening to the podcast, in which case this is time delayed, and you're listening to us in the future.
And there is explicit content on this show.
There is, yes.
Most often in the songs and in my introductions.
In your introductions, yeah. Yeah, DJ Mochi pushing the limits. If you've never listened to the Copyright Experiment before, it's an hour-long show every week on CITR. We play exclusively freely available music. So if you like free music, if you like music that is novel, then this is the place to do it, place to get it. And any music we play, we also offer for free downloads on our blog at copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com.
And you'll find lots of fresh remixes of hip-hop and R&B and dance tracks and all that jazz. And boy, is it fun.
Seems to be what the folks are putting out for free these days.
All the cool kids.
Mm-hmm. All the cool little producers coming from the street, putting music out online. Anyway, why don't we jump into our topic for today? So we every episode we talk about something related to intellectual property and copyright in music and how it's changing, how the internet affects everything now, and you know, which enables the fact that we can play all free music.
Just to get as like a small primer bit of information, this article we're going to talk about, there's one part where he says that 97% of Americans use the internet. I thought that's pretty like cool. So if you didn't think it's relevant, like, it is.
Yeah, it's,
I mean, maybe it's different in Canada, but I can't imagine it's that different.
Right. To which capacity they use the internet, I don't know. I'm not going to say. But just the fact that that many people use it in some form or another, or have used it, I guess, is pretty impressive. Kind of speaks to the penetration that it's had in just like a short amount of time, really. So today we're going to talk about something that's integral to the internet, and it's kind of a normative opinion that a lot of people who know a lot about the internet really advocate for, and that is net neutrality. And if you've been on the internet in the last few days, you've probably read a bit about it because it's been everywhere. And we actually talked about it on our show a few weeks ago when I can't remember why we were talking about it. There's a hearing, I think, that the FCC had.
Yeah, they're hearing opinions
from like industry professionals and stuff. Yeah. Okay. And then we're also talking about it today because it's in the news again, and people just can't stop talking about it, and they can't stop spouting off crazy opinions about it, what they think the internet should be like. And so we're going to hop in here and clear the air a bit and
mostly
just explain
just
what happened
give
today.
Give some explanation.
Yeah. So today the FCC, which is the Federal Communications Commission in the United States, released a document basically outlining their proposed changes to how they regulate the internet as a service. And so they released this really long document. You can go check it out. Maybe we'll post a link on the blog. It's about 80 pages long. It set out the ways in which the FCC is going to use a legal basis to enforce things like net neutrality. And the reason they're doing this now is because in January, there's a District of Columbia Circuit Court ruled in favor of Verizon against the FCC, saying that the FCC was basically overstepping their their jurisdiction with their legal rationale by enforcing a net neutrality rules for internet service providers such as Verizon.
Yeah, so they were, the FCC was trying to tell Verizon you can't charge, you know, people that are trying to provide content in order to give them a faster lane.
Right. Yeah. And let's go over some net neutrality basics here.
Yeah, and then Verizon said, well, there's nothing against the law, so we're going to take you to court. And so they took the FCC to court, mm-hmm. and Verizon won because there's nothing strong enough in the current internet regulations to prevent someone from charging for a faster lane in the internet.
Well, I think I'll clarify that even further, but I don't think it's that there's nothing in the law that allows the FCC to do that, but the rationale that they were using wasn't adequate, and it wasn't based on actual legal documents. So so what the FCC is doing now is they're rewriting it all to kind of use a legal rationale to basically enforce the components of net neutrality that they've kind of been trying to do for a long time anyway, since 2010 at least. And so some of these rules, I guess, we'll go through. One of them is that there's a transparency rule. So the purpose of this is to promote and protect an open internet. And the FCC is aware of this. And so the first thing they need is transparency between ISPs and users and regulators. And so any ISP will be required to make clear how their network works, the ways in which they practice things, either deviating to or in line with industry standards, and show how they allow content providers to contribute and send traffic through their network to users. So, and that's actually a really big cornerstone, I think, just the fact that making those practices public is really important in the long run for the future of, you know, an internet that we can actually adequately regulate. Another section is their no blocking rule, and the no blocking rule basically says that ISPs cannot block lawful content, apps, services, which are subject to reasonable network management. So,
and this is the first time you hear that sort of nebulous, undetermined term,
right?
Reasonable network management, which they actually do talk about more later on in the document.
Yeah, they do define it, but it's still, I mean, they leave it open for a reason. And I think part of that reason is concerning that, you know, It's up to really the ISP to determine what, well, not just the ISP, but I mean, they can really hide behind a lot of things by calling some behavior reasonable network management. Another aspect of the no blocking rule is that ISPs can't block consumers from accessing lawful websites, which again is subject to reasonable network management. And I think part of that is also a way to put larger ISPs on the same playing field as smaller ones, because a lot of the telecom companies that exist in the U.S. are actually, the majority of them, vast majority of them are small businesses or classified as small businesses, which it needs to be balanced against the huge giant ISPs such as like Comcast and Verizon that have different kind of needs and regulatory requirements. So I think they're kind of keeping it open for that reason. They also make a distinction between what is a commercially unreasonable practice and what a reasonable network management is. And so one could argue that you could do anything that the FCC is saying you can't do just by claiming that it's a reasonable network management decision. But the FCC actually says, those kinds of things like blocking specific content from, say, a third party that you don't own, or disclosing the transparency of your network, those are the kinds of things that are commercially unreasonable practices and not reasonable network management. So it's a bit wordy, but a distinction is made at least.
Yeah, the part I really like is Tom Wheeler specifically says, he gives some examples of what's reasonable and what's not. Or just some that are actually unreasonable and would therefore be prohibited. So, for example, if a network operator slowed the speed below which the customer bought, then that would be commercially unreasonable. If the network operator blocked access to lawful content, that would be unreasonable and in violation of their blocking idea.
Mm-hmm.
If a firm decided to try and charge someone, like in the case of Netflix, that would be considered commercially unreasonable. If a consumer buys a capacity, then in order to have certain priority lanes would also be prohibited.
Right.
Because that would be considered commercially unreasonable.
Right, that you're paying for a certain amount of allotment on the network and you're getting some version of that.
Yeah.
Which is commercially unreasonable because it gives an edge to the provider.
And I'm personally really glad to see that, because I think that's a really important thing. If they can enforce that, that will be a good step in the right direction for net neutrality.
Right. Yeah, and I think one of the big takeaways from this document is that the FCC is very aware of the implications of a partial internet, and they say so in one of their appendixes. They say that the internet's openness enables a virtuous circle of innovation in which new uses of the network, including new content, applications, services, and devices, lead to increased end-user demand for broadband, which drives network improvements, which in turn leads to further innovative network uses. However, as the Commission has previously found, broadband providers have both the incentive and the ability to limit internet openness. As discussed in the notice, this document, the Commission is seeking comment on proposed open internet rules that will protect against the harms identified in the previous version of their net neutrality rules, while fostering all sources of innovation in the collection of networks known as the internet. So they have a pretty comprehensive understanding of what the implications if they decide to do nothing, and what the implications of it would be if they actually do enact these rules. And one of the things they're doing with this document is calling for individuals to actually, and stakeholders to kind of give their opinions on whether they think these are fair rules for everyone.
Yeah, and I think that's really neat and great, especially, you know, coming back to that fact we said about 97% of people using the internet.
Right.
You know, it becomes really an important issue for everyone to, at least that uses it, you know, with any kind of weight, to know what's going on and put their part in it, you know, put their two cents in and try to make it something
right.
That, you know, is really good for the economy and innovation at the same time, and not just for the economy.
Right. I mean, it's a double whammy, right? You're hitting both, you know, the innovation arguments and the personal expression, autonomy and freedom arguments.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that the FCC plans to do with this draft as well is to instate a ombudsperson to basically act as a mediator between the FCC and individuals who aren't really savvy in the way the regulation wording and the way the law works, and that small companies that, you know, don't really have time or resources to dedicate to learning these things can actually have their fair share and understand. Communicate effectively with the commission.
And am I correct in saying that kind of goes along with the transparency
part of it? Yeah, the ombudsperson would definitely focusing on making sure that the transparency between those ISPs are happening. So the biggest question coming out of this, and it's a bit nitpicky, but it's kind of an important point, because it'll determine if this draft that they've made will be adequate in protecting kind of internet freedoms in the future. And we kind of alluded to this earlier in the episode here now, that Netflix recently did a deal since the January ruling with Comcast. And in the previous episode, we talked about net neutrality. We said that the deal that Netflix made with Comcast is not the same as what the FCC is talking about here. And because it uses kind of basically what Comcast is doing is they're allowing the data coming from Netflix to basically flow into more lanes, more open lanes, instead of stifling it all in just one bottleneck. And this is different from actively blocking content by third parties. It's basically just, you know, opening more registers at the checkout at the supermarket, instead of, you know, analyzing everything for content and deciding what can go through and what can't. So the FCC actually isn't making a strong statement on this on this particular issue, partly because it doesn't really fall under the classical definition of net neutrality. And also because it would be actually difficult under the law framework they're using to enforce this net neutrality, that it would be difficult to actually use Section 706, which is what they're using in this document, to defend net neutrality. So the biggest question that a lot of people have right now, which this document doesn't really adequately answer, is basically, is the FCC going to clamp down on these kind of deals that Netflix is making with Comcast? And currently their approach is basically to say, well, let's watch and see, and every deal that happens like this is going to have to be scrutinized on a case-by-case basis by the commission, but we don't have any rules specifically to safeguard against it. And it's not entirely clear whether these kind of deals are going to be as bad for net neutrality as things like blocking specific content, because it's fundamentally a different process. But at the same time, you could kind of see how it could be used to the advantage of people who can afford to pay for, you know, to open up those extra checkout lanes. And so in this document, Tom Wheeler, the chair of the FCC, says, well, all of this is basically the rationale for all of these rules that we've drafted up are covered under Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act. And that part of the Telecommunications Act, it vests the FCC with affirmative authority to enact measures encouraging the deployment of broadband infrastructure. So Section 706 basically says the FCC has the ability to make rules that will encourage broadband infrastructure throughout the United States. And now this is what the judge ruled in the D.C. Court case, that they can use this as a rationale to kind of lay out net neutrality rules, because the rules that force ISPs to be neutral are also going to benefit user penetration and engagement in the United States internet services.
Yeah, and I think that being said, that this is going to be one of those things, in my opinion, that will develop sort of by precedent. You know, as cases come up, they'll start to form an idea of what things are commercially reasonable and unreasonable, sort of in a dynamic way,
right,
to some degree. And hopefully that way will be in line with the overwhelming opinion for net neutrality, or at least an opinion that is fostering a good environment for innovation and, you know, it's truly neutral as can be. And yeah, coming back to the Netflix thing, it's interesting because Tom Wheeler says that that kind of deal would be prohibited by their...
Well, he doesn't actually say that.
But he does right here.
Well, that's a different... that's actually a different case for... the deal that Netflix has with Comcast is different from the kinds of deals he's talking about in that section. But we'll talk about it after the show, I guess. But right now he's saying that you can't make deals with parties to restrict the to pay for basically extra bandwidth for your things to go through. But you can right now pay for, you know, specialized allotment for your bandwidth, which is called peering, basically. And that's kind of a different setup within the ISP's network configuration. So it's kind of more of a technical detail than something that really, but it can actually have a big deal on how things are legislated.
They're kind of the same effect.
You're
so right. One would hope that, you know, they would sort of take that technicality out of the legal documents and really focus on the effect, not so much the technical.
Yeah, and that's kind of
that's where they need strength in the document, I guess.
Yeah, and that's really the crux of the argument that a lot of net neutrality proponents are saying, that, you know, this needs to be covered in this document. And right now the FCC is saying, well, we'll kind of go on a case-by-case basis right now. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason is because Wheeler is basically trying to use Section 706 as a legal rationale for all of the net neutrality rules he's proposing. And the reason he's doing this is because this is what the judge suggested they do, and it's going to be the quickest way to get these kind of rules enforced for ISPs to stop the kind of open Wild West kind of thing that's going on right now, where, you know, Netflix is just free to make these deals with Comcast because nothing really is preventing them right now.
Or in a certain way, Comcast is kind of able to hold them hostage in that.
Right. And so Wheeler is basically saying, let's get these rules up and working as fast as possible because, you know, they're important to the integrity of the internet. But the proponents of net neutrality also say that, well, maybe the, instead of using Section 706 as your legal rationale, you could use Title II of the Communications Act in the U.S., which defines what is considered a common carrier. And a common carrier is basically a service that carries persons or cargo or data now in the telecom age without discrimination on what it is, and also is held accountable for ensuring that the data, or not the data, but the goods can travel along there, and they're basically legally responsible to some degree that it actually gets there in the same way that it left. And so classifying it as a common carrier would actually solve a lot of these problems, and it would take away the distinction between paying for a better broadband service and then or paying for extra peering by your ISP. So it does exactly what you're kind of saying should be the case.
Yeah. And then in that case, so those kind of problems are solved, but then you have other problems that are going to come up because it doesn't quite fit that model exactly. It's kind of a different beast. So they'd have to,
they have to
do some modifying, I think, or at least some to set some kind of a unique precedent, I guess.
Yeah, the idea of a common carrier was first established for things like railroads, and then
maybe post as well.
Yeah, and post, and then also since then it was amended to also cover radio and telephone lines, which you know helps ensure kind of a neutral telecom industry. But now that we have the internet, which is a whole different beast from the telephone industry. And they're the same telecom companies, but they're entirely different platforms, and they have to be treated as such. So I think there is a danger, especially in classifying as a common carrier, because it's a lot stricter of a regulatory body, and it's not really clear whether you know the small-time ISPs can really compete or actually work well under that kind of regulatory framework. Mm-hmm. The other argument is that if you try to use Title II to enforce net neutrality, then you kind of have to create this whole new roadmap to do it, and it's going to take a lot longer, which is what Tom Wheeler really doesn't want.
Yeah, and then we also run into the same problems that we see, you know, in like the music industry, for example, with people kind of holding on to old models and applying them to the new system.
Right.
It's awkward, and it has to be changed somewhat, and it doesn't really work entirely the way it is. And so I think the same thing would happen here, and we'd have to change things significantly. And it might even be as much work as making a whole new document.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like I was just going to say, the same thing could happen. You could make the same argument about Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act, which is that the FCC is legally allowed to regulate telecom industries, but internet industries are a lot different, and using an act that was originally made for the telecom industry, even though it has amendments for the internet age, still would maybe a little inadequate.
And I think that makes sense, because if you try to pigeonhole it in the same kind of group as the other telecommunications and things like that, like mail or whatever, it's forcing it into a situation where there's less optionality to choose what the future of it is going to be, because there's already a pre-existing framework that has to be adjusted.
Right.
And I think that makes it awkward, and it's less comfortable for people, because then they have to change something. You know, it's not as easy for them to say, okay, let's change old things. It's easier for them to say, okay, let's make something new because it's a new thing. I think that would be easier for people to wrap their heads around in sort of the law and
yeah,
the courts
it,
and stuff like
it
that.
It would. I mean, the downside to that is that, you know, a lot of regulation and legal precedent, I mean, is based exactly on that, as precedent, right?
That's true.
So when you draft up completely new legislation, it becomes very easy, I think, for businesses or large companies or just individuals to kind of take advantage of loopholes they find in it. You kind of have to play with it a bit to test it. So the advantage of using legislation that already exists is that a lot of those loopholes have been tied off already. And so, I mean, it's a tricky thing, right?
Yeah.
And there's a reason these documents are 88 pages long. So.
And why there's hundreds and hundreds of emails that Tom Wheeler's supposedly receiving and
right.
trying to
Yeah, even understand. At and it's a very passionate debate for a lot of people. And even during the announcement of this, the hearing of where they kind of released this document, there was actually protesters who had to be escorted out of the building because they were running in to claim net neutrality for their side.
Well, was there anything else you wanted to add to that, Tim?
No, I think that kind of about covers it all.
So, yeah, if you want to check out more about this, we'll post a link to the document on our blog, copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com. And we're about to get into our music section here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back in just a few moments. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Peace.
Oh my, become a friend of CITR and get great discounts downtown at
The Baker and the Chef, Bangone T-Shirts, Cherry Bomb, House of Vintage, Beat Street Records, Dunleavy Snack Bar, The Fall Tattooing, Fortune Song Club, His Boutique, Pacific Cinematheque, Perch, The Portside Pub, Save on Meats, Vinyl Records, and Zoo Shop.
Wow, it sure does pay to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus, or go online to www.citr.ca.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure. That's what friends are for.
Do you have the guts to find a cure for Crohn's and colitis? Crohn's and colitis affects 1 in 150 Canadians, so it's likely you know someone with one of these incurable and painful diseases. Show you care by joining us for the annual Gutsy Walk for Crohn's and Colitis Research, Sunday, June 9th. For more information, visit www.gutsywalk.ca.
Cover of J. Cole by Anna Luna and AC Slater teaming up. Before that was Vancouver local Montreal expat Heartbeats, the track called Spring Break Cancouver. Nice little remix of Liz. So it's by Vices. Before that was Byrell the Great. It's a little Vogue mashup. Lincoln Hood Boy teaming up for a Jersey Club Jam. DJ Unique before that with that Flostra Down, that's a remix.
Just a sucker for love. No, no, oh, no. so with that?
Baby, I ain't mean to rain on my voice. I'm sorry. Just call me, please. I just saw your Facebook chilling with August. Man, on some real issue, about to make me call
this
it.
This is the
Slow Juke Vibe, Terratone remixing DC Natives with Kids. Before that was a Thomas White remix. Thomas White from Montreal, co-founder of Raw Records. Big fan of the label over here.
Work.
nice little forward track. Cool it off. Finish off the hour. So goodbye, Seablings. If you like any of the songs you hear tonight, make sure you check out the blog, copyrightexperiment.tumblr.com. Download links for everything, all our old shows in their full form. Get the podcast if you want. Download it and play it in iTunes. Hope you have a good night. We are off, taking you through the rest of the night. We'll be Pierre with Oral Tentacles. So stay tuned. And tune in next week, Thursdays at 11 on CITR 101.9 FM.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?